I walk through the metal detectors, and a guard pats me down. My legs feel shaky. I look back at Silas, who is standing with his hands in his pockets, watching me. He nods his head to urge me forward, and I feel a little surge of bravery. "I can do this," I say under my breath. "Just a little visit with Daddy-O." I am taken to a room and told to wait. 20-odd tables are scattered throughout. The woman who is in front of me in line is sitting at a table with her head in her hands, while her kids play in a corner, stacking blocks. I sit as far away from them as possible and stare at the door. Any minute my so-called father is going to walk through those doors, and I don't even know what he looks like. What if I get it wrong? I'm thinking about leaving, just running out and telling the others that he didn't want to see me, when suddenly he walks in. I know it's him because his eyes immediately find me. He smiles and walks over. Walks is not the word to describe what he does. He saunters. I don't stand up.
"Hey, Peanut,"
he says. He awkwardly hugs me as I sit stiff as a board. "Hi, Dad." He slides into the seat across from me, still smiling. I can see how easy it would be to adore him. Even in his prison jumpsuit, he's set apart. It looks all wrong. Him being here with his bright white teeth and neatly combed blonde hair. Jeanette was right. We must look just like our mother, because we don't look anything like him. I have his mouth, I think, but not his pale skin tone. I don't have his eyes. When I saw my picture, that's the first thing I noticed. I have sad-looking eyes. He has laughing eyes, though he probably doesn't have anything to laugh about. I'm lured in.
"You haven't been here in 2 weeks," he says. "I was beginning to think you girls just left me here to rot."
I shrug off the daddy vibes I was getting a minute ago. Narcissistic prick. I can already tell how he works, and I just met him. He says things with laughing eyes and a grin, but his words lash out like a whip. "You left us destitute. The car is a problem, so it's hard for me to drive this far, and my mother is an alcoholic. I think I'm mad at you for that, but I don't remember." He stares at me for a minute, his smile frozen on his face.
"I'm sorry you feel that way."
He folds his arms across the table and leans forward. He's studying me. It makes me uncomfortable, like maybe he knows more about me than I know myself, which is probably the case in my current situation.
"I got a phone call this morning,"
he says, leaning back in his seat. "Oh yeah? From who?"
He shakes his head. "It doesn't matter who it was from. What matters is what they told me. About you."
I don't offer him any information. I can't tell if he's baiting me.
"Is there anything you want to tell me, Charlize?"
I tilt my head. What kind of game is he playing?
"No."
He nods a little and then purses his lips together. His fingers come up in the form of a steeple under his chin while he stares across the table at me.
"I was told you were caught trespassing onto someone's property, and that there is a reason to believe you're under the influence of drugs."
I take my time before I respond to him. Trespassing? Who would tell him I was trespassing? The tarot reader? It was her house I was in. To my knowledge, we didn't tell anyone what had happened. We just went straight to the hotel last night, according to our notes. So many things run through my mind. I try to sort through them all.
"Why were you on our old property, Charlie?"
My pulse begins to quicken. I stand up. "Is there anything to drink here?" I ask, spinning around in a circle. "I'm thirsty." I spot the soda machine, but I don't have any money on me. Just then, my father shoves his hand into his pocket and pulls out a handful of quarters. He slides them across the table. They let you have money here? He nods, eyeing me suspiciously the entire time. I grab the change and walk over to the soda machine. I insert the quarters and glance back at him. He's not looking at me. He's staring down at his hands folded together across the table. I wait for my drink to plummet to the bottom, and even then I stall another minute while I open it and take a sip. This man makes me nervous, and I don't know why. I don't know how Charlie looked up to him like she did. I guess if I had memories of him as my father, maybe I would feel differently about him. But I don't have memories. I can only go by what I'm seeing, and right now I see a criminal. A beady-eyed, pale excuse for a man. I almost drop my soda. Every muscle in my body weakens with the realization. I think back to a description either me or Silas wrote in our notes. A physical description of the shrimp. Of Cora. They call her the shrimp because she has beady eyes and skin that turns 10 shades of pink when she talks. Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Brett is Cora's father? He's staring at me now, probably wondering why it's taking so long for me to make my way back to him. I head in his direction. When I reach the table, I eye him hard. Once I'm seated, I lean forward and don't allow a single bit of my trepidation to seep through my confidence. Let's play a game, I tell him. He raises an amused brow.
Okay.
Let's pretend I've lost my memory. I'm a blank slate. I'm putting things together I may not have seen otherwise in my prior adoration of you. Are you following?
Not really, he says.
He looks sour. I wonder if he gets like this when people don't fall all over themselves to please him. Did you happen to father another daughter? I don't know, maybe one with a crazy mother who would hold me against my will. His face turns white. He immediately starts to deny, turns his body away from me, and calls me crazy. But I saw the panic on his face, and I know I'm onto something. Did you hear the last part of my sentence, or are you just focused on keeping up appearances? He turns his head to look at me. And this time his eyes are no longer soft. She kidnapped me, I say. Kept me locked in a room in her, our old house. His Adam's apple bobs as he swallows. I think he's deciding what to tell me.
She found you trespassing on her property, he says finally. She said you were acting irate. You had no idea where you were. She didn't want you to call the police because she's convinced you're doing drugs, so she kept you to help you detox. She had my permission, Charlie. She called me as soon as she found you in her house.
I'm not on drugs, I tell him. And who in their right mind would hold someone against their will?
Would you rather she called the police on you? You were talking crazy, and you broke into her house in the middle of the night.
I don't know what to believe right now. The only memory of that experience I have is in the notes I wrote to myself. And that girl is my half-sister, Cora? He stares at the tabletop, unable to meet my eyes. When he doesn't respond, I decide to play his game. It's in your best interest to be honest with me. Silas and I came across a file that Clark Nash has been desperately searching for since before your trial. He doesn't even flinch. His poker face is too perfect. He doesn't ask me what file I have. He just says,
"Yes, she's your half-sister. I had an affair with her mother years ago."
It's like this is all happening to a character on a television show. I wonder how the real Charlie would take this. Burst into tears? Get up and run out? Punch this dude in the face? From what I've read of her, probably the latter.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Does my mother know?
Yes. She found out after we lost the house.
What a sorry excuse for a man. First he cheats on my mother, impregnates another woman, then he hides it from his wife and kids until he gets caught.
God, I say. No wonder she's an alcoholic.
I lean back in my seat and stare up at the ceiling.
You never claimed her? Does the girl know?
She knows, he says.
I feel hot anger. For Charlie, for this poor girl who has to go to school with Charlie and watch her live the life she didn't get to have, and for this whole screwed-up situation. I take a moment to gather myself while he sits in silence. I wish I could say he was wallowing in guilt, but I'm not so sure this man is capable of feeling guilt. Why do they live in the house I grew up in? Did you give it to them? This question turns him a light shade of pink. He pops his jaw as his eyes dart left to right. His voice is quieter when he speaks, so that only I can hear him.
That woman was a client of mine, Charlie, and a mistake. I broke it off with her years ago, a month before she found out she was pregnant. We came to an agreement, of sorts, that I would be present financially, but nothing else. It was better for everyone that way.
So what you're saying is you bought her silence.
Charlie, he says, I made a mistake. Believe me, I've paid for it tenfold. She used the money I'd been sending her all those years to purchase our old house in auction. She did that just to spite me.
So she's vindictive, and maybe a little bit crazy. And my father is to blame for that? Jesus, this just gets worse and worse. Did you do what they say you did? I ask him. Since we're telling the truth, I think I have a right to know.
His eyes dart around the room again to see who's listening.
Why are you asking all of these questions? He whispers. This isn't like you.
I'm 17 years old. I think I have the right to change. This guy. I want to roll my eyes at him. But first I need him to give me more answers.
Did Clark Nash put you up to this?
He asks, leaning forward with accusation in both his words and his expression.
Are you involved with Silas again?
He's trying to turn it around on me. He can't get to me anymore.
Yes, Daddy, I say, smiling sweetly. I'm involved with Silas again, and we're in love, and very happy. Thank you for asking.
Veins bulge at his temples. His hands tighten into angry fists.
Charlie, you know what I think about that.
His reaction sets me off. I stand up and my chair scoots back with a screech.
Let me tell you what I think, Dad.
I take a step away from the table and point at him.
You've ruined a lot of lives. You thought money could take the place of your responsibilities. Your choices drove my mother to drinking. You left your own daughters with nothing, not even a role model in their lives. Not to mention all the people you swindled money from in your company. And you blame everyone else because you're a really shitty human and an even shittier father, I say. I don't know Charlie and Jeanette very well, but I think they deserve better.
I turn and walk away, tossing a couple of final words over my shoulder.
Goodbye, Brett. Have a nice life.
Chapter 6. Silas. I'm sitting cross-legged on the hood of the car, leaning against the windshield and writing down notes when she returns. She was in there for more than an hour, so I did what she said and came to wait out here to keep an eye on our siblings. I sit up straight when I see her. I don't ask her if she found out anything. I just wait for her to say something. She doesn't look like she wants to be spoken to at this point. She's heading straight for the car. She makes brief eye contact with me as she passes me. I turn my head and watch her as she walks swiftly to the rear of the car and then back to the front again. Then to the rear. Back to the front. Her hands are clenched in fists at her side. Jeanette opens the front door and steps out of the car.
"What did the world's greatest prison dad have to say?"
Charlie stops in her tracks.
"Did you know about Cora?"
Jeanette pulls her neck back and shakes her head.
"Cora? Who?"
"The shrimp," Charlie says loudly.
"Did you know he's her father?"
Jeanette's mouth drops open and I immediately jump off the hood of the car.
"Wait, what?"
I say, walking toward Charlie. She pulls her hands up and rubs them over her face, then makes her fingers into a steeple as she breathes in slowly.
"Silas, I think you were right. This isn't a dream."
I can see the fear in every part of her, the fear that hasn't settled in since she lost her memories again several hours ago. It's all just now hitting her. I take a slow step forward and reach my hand out.
"Charlie, it's okay. We'll figure this out."
She takes a quick step back and begins shaking her head.
"What if we don't? What if it keeps happening?"
She begins pacing again, this time with her hands locked behind her head.
"What if it happens over and over until our lives waste away?"
Her chest begins to heave in and out with the deep breaths she's taking.
"What's wrong with you?"
Jeanette asks. She directs her next question at me.
"What am I missing?"
Landon is standing next to me now, so I turn to him. "I'm taking Charlie for a walk. Will you explain to Jeanette what's happening to us?" Landon presses his lips together and nods.
"Yeah, but she'll think we're all lying."
I grab Charlie's arm and urge her to walk with me. Tears begin streaming down her cheeks, and she swipes at them angrily.
"He was living a double life," she says. "How could he do that to her?"
"To who?" I ask. "Jeanette?" She stops and says,
"No, not Jeanette. Not Charlie. Not my mother. To Cora. How could he know he fathered a child and refuse to have anything to do with her? He's an awful person, Silas. How did Charlie not see that?"
She's worried about the shrimp. The girl who assisted in holding her captive for an entire day? "Try to take a breath," I tell her, grabbing her shoulders and forcing her to face me. "You probably never saw that side of him. He was good to you. You loved him based on the person he pretended to be.
And you can't feel sorry for that girl, Charlie. She helped her mother hold you against your will."
She begins shaking her head back and forth feverishly.
"They never hurt me, Silas. I made it a point to stress that in the letter. She was rude, sure, but I'm the one who broke into their house. I must have followed her there the night I didn't get in the cab. She thought we were on drugs because I had no memory of anything, and I don't blame her. And then I forgot who I was again, and I probably started to panic."
She exhales sharply and pauses for a moment. When she looks up at me, she looks calmer. She folds her lips together and moistens them.
"I don't think she had anything to do with what's happened to us. She's just a crazy, bitter woman who hates my father and probably wanted some sick revenge for how I treated her daughter. But they got brought into the fold by us. This whole time, we've been looking at other people, trying to blame other people. But what if..."
She exhales a breath and then,
"What if we did this to each other?"
I let go of her shoulders and take a step back. She sits down on the curb and holds her head in her hands. "There's no way we would have done this to ourselves on purpose." "I don't think that's possible, Charlie," I say, taking a seat next to her. "How could we do this? How do two people just simultaneously stop remembering at the same time? It has to be something bigger than what we're capable of."
"If it has to be bigger than us, then it also has to be bigger than my father,"
and Cora, and Cora's mother, and my mom, and your parents. If we aren't capable of causing this, then no one else should be capable of it either. I nod. I know. She brings her thumb up to her mouth for a second. Then, so if this isn't happening to us because of other people, what could it be? I can feel the muscles in my neck tighten. I bring my hands up behind my head and look up at the sky. Something bigger? What's bigger? The universe? God? Is this the beginning of the apocalypse? She stands up and paces back and forth in front of me. Do you think we even believed in God before this happened to us? I have no idea. But I've prayed more in the last few days than I probably have in my entire life. I stand up and grab her hand, pulling her in the direction of the car. I want to know everything your father said. Let's head back, and you can write down everything he told you while I drive. She slides her fingers through mine and walks back to the car with me. When we return, Jeanette is leaning against the passenger door. She's glaring at both of us. So, you seriously can't remember anything? Either of you? Her attention is focused solely on Charlie now. I motion for her and Landon to sit in the back seat this time. I open the driver door as Charlie responds to her. No, we can't. And I swear I'm not making this up for kicks, Jeanette. I don't know what kind of sister I've been to you, but I swear I wouldn't make this up. Jeanette eyes Charlie for a moment and then says, You've been a really shitty sister the last couple of years. But I guess if everything Landon just told me is true and you really can't remember anything, then that explains why not a single one of you dick faces has told me happy birthday today. She opens the door to the back seat, climbs inside, and then slams it. Ouch, Charlie says. Yeah, I agree. You forgot your little sister's birthday? That's pretty selfish of you, Charlie. She slaps me playfully in the chest. I grab her hand, and I swear there's a moment that passes between us. A single second where she looks at me like she can feel what she once felt for me. But then she blinks, pulls her hand from mine, and climbs in the car.
Chapter 7. Charlie. It's not really my fault that the universe is punishing me. Us. Silas and me. I keep forgetting that Silas is screwed too, which probably means I'm a narcissist. Great. I think about the sister in the car with me who is having a really shitty birthday, and the half-sister who lives in my old house with her psychotic mother, who, according to my journals, I've been torturing for a decade. I am a bad person, and an even worse sister. Do I even want to get my memories back? I stare out the window and watch as we pass all of the other stupid cars. I don't have any memories, but I can at least make sure Jeanette has some of this day. Hey, Silas, I say, can you put something into that fancy GPS for me?
Yeah, he says. Like what?
I don't know the girl in the back seat at all. She could be super into role-play video games for all I know. An arcade, I say. I see Landon and Jeanette perk up in the back seat. Yes, I congratulate myself. All pubescent humans like video games. It's a thing.
Kind of a weird time to want to go play games, Silas says. Don't you think we should...
I think we should play games, I interrupt, because it's Jeanette's birthday. I make my eyes really wide so he understands this isn't up for discussion. He makes an O face and gives me a really lame thumbs up. Charlie hates thumbs up. I can tell by her body's immediate reaction to it. Silas finds an arcade not far from where we are. When we get there, he pulls out his wallet and digs around until he finds a credit card. Jeanette makes eyes at me, like she's embarrassed, but I shrug. I barely even know this guy. What does it matter that he's spending his money on us? Besides, I don't have any money. My father lost it all, and Silas's father still has some, so it's fine. Not only am I a narcissist, I'm also good at justification. We carry our tokens in paper cups, and as soon as we're inside the arcade, Jeanette and Landon walk off to do their own thing. Together. I make eyes at Silas and mouth, "See?"
"Come on," Silas says. "Let's get some pizza. Let the kids play."
He winks at me, and I try not to smile. We find a table to wait for our pizza, and I slide into a booth, wrapping my arms around my knees. "Silas," I say, "what if this keeps happening to us, this endless loop of forgetting? What will we do?"
"I don't know," he says.
"Find each other over and over. It's not that bad, right?"
I glance over at him to see if he's joking. It isn't that bad, but the situation is. Who wants to spend their life not knowing who they are?
"I could spend every day getting to know you all over again, Charlie, and I don't think I'd get sick of it."
Heat climbs up my body, and I quickly look away. That's my go-to with Silas. "Don't look at him. Don't look at him. Don't look at him." "You're dumb," I say. But he's not dumb. He's a romantic, and his words are powerful. Charlie isn't, I can tell. But she wants to be. I can tell that, too. She desperately wants Silas to show her it's not all a lie. There's a pull inside of her every time she looks at him. It feels like a tugging, and I want to brush it away every time it happens. I sigh and rip open a sugar packet, emptying the powder onto the table. Being a teenager is exhausting. Silas silently watches me draw patterns in the sugar, until finally he grabs my hand.
"We'll figure it out," he assures me. "We're on the right track."
I dust my hands on my pants. "Okay. Even though I know we aren't on any track, we're just as lost as we were when we woke up in the hotel today. I'm also a liar. A narcissist, a justifier, a liar." Jeanette and Landon find us just as the pizza arrives. They slide into our booth, rosy-cheeked and laughing. In the entire day I've known Jeanette, I've never even seen her come close to laughter. I hate Charlie's father more right now for screwing up a teenage girl. Two teenage girls, if I count myself. Well, three. Now that I know about Cora. I watch Jeanette bite into her pizza. It doesn't have to be this way. If I could just come out of this thing, I could take care of her, be better for both of us. "Charlie," she says, setting down her slice, "will you come play with me?" I smile. "Yeah, of course." She beams at me, and my heart suddenly feels so big and full. When I look over at Silas, he's staring at me, glassy-eyed. The corner of his mouth lifts in a small smile.
Chapter 8. Silas. It's dark when we pull into Charlie and Jeanette's driveway. There's an awkward moment where I should probably walk Charlie to the door, but based on the way Landon and Jeanette have been flirting in the back seat, I don't know how all four of us are supposed to do this at the same time. Jeanette opens her door, and then Landon opens his, so Charlie and I wait in the car.
"They're exchanging numbers," she says, watching them. "How cute."
We sit in silence watching them flirt until Jeanette disappears inside the house.
"Our turn," Charlie says, opening her door.
I walk slowly with her up the sidewalk, hoping her mother doesn't see me here. I don't have the energy to deal with that woman tonight. I feel bad that Charlie's about to have to do just that. She's wringing her hands together, nervously. I know she's stalling because she doesn't want me to leave her alone tonight. Every single memory she has consists of me and her.
What time is it?
She asks. I pull my phone out of my pocket to check. It's after 10. She nods and then glances behind her at the house.
I hope my mother is asleep, she says. And then, Silas.
I interrupt whatever she's about to say. Charlie, I don't think we should split up tonight. Her eyes meet mine again. She looks relieved. I'm the only person she knows, after all. The last thing we probably need right now is to be distracted by people we don't know.
Good. I was just about to suggest that.
I nudge my head to the door behind her. We need to make it look like you're home, though. Go inside, make like you're going to bed. I'll go drop Landon off at my house, and then come back to get you in an hour. She nods.
I'll meet you at the end of the road, she says. Where do you think we should stay tonight?
I think about that. It's probably best if we stay at my house so we can see if there's anything we missed in my room that might help us. I'll sneak you upstairs to my bedroom. We have a lot to go over tonight. Charlie's eyes drop to the ground.
Upstairs? She says curiously.
She inhales a slow breath, and I can hear the air sliding through her clenched teeth.
Silas.
She lifts her eyes to mine, and they're narrowed. She has an accusatory look about her, and I have no idea what I've done to provoke this look.
You wouldn't lie to me, would you?
I tilt my head, not sure if I heard her right. What do you mean?
I've been noticing things, little things, she says.
I can feel the descent of my heart.
What did I say?
Charlie, I'm not sure what you're getting at. She takes a step back. Her hand covers her mouth for a moment, and then she points at me.
How do you know your bedroom is upstairs when you haven't even been to your house yet?
Shit, I did say upstairs. Shaking her head, she adds,
And you made a comment earlier at the prison about how you've prayed a lot in the last few days, but we're both only supposed to remember today. And this morning when I told you my name was Delilah, I could see you trying not to smile because you knew I was lying.
Her voice begins to falter between suspicious and scared. I hold up a reassuring palm, but she backs another step closer to the house. This is a problem. I'm not sure I know how to respond to her. I don't like knowing that she would rather run inside a house that terrified her 5 minutes ago than be standing near me. Why did I lie to her this morning?
Charlie, please don't be scared of me.
I can tell it's already too late. She darts for her front door, so I lunge forward and wrap my arms around her, pulling her against my chest. She starts to scream, so I cover her mouth with my hand.
Calm down, I say against her ear. I won't hurt you.
The last thing I need is for her not to trust me. She grabs my arm with both hands, trying to free herself from my grasp.
You're right. Charlie, you're right. I lied to you. But if you'll calm down for 2 seconds, I'll explain why.
She lifts a leg while I'm still holding onto her from behind. She presses her foot against the house and kicks as hard as she can, sending both of us tumbling backward. I lose my grip on her and she begins to crawl away from me, but I'm able to grab her again and push her onto her back. She's looking up at me wide-eyed, but she isn't screaming this time. My hands are pressing her arms against the ground.
Stop it, I tell her.
Why did you lie? She cries. Why are you pretending this happened to you, too? She struggles some more, so I tighten my hold.
I'm not pretending, Charlie. I've been forgetting, just like you have. But it didn't happen to me today. I don't know why. But I can only remember the last 2 days. That's it, I swear.
I look her in the eyes, and she holds my stare. She's still mildly struggling, but I can tell she also wants to hear my explanation.
I didn't want you to be afraid of me this morning, so I pretended it happened again. But I swear, up until this morning, it's been happening to both of us.
She stops struggling and just lets her head fall to the side. She closes her eyes, completely exhausted, emotionally and physically. "Why is this happening?" she whispers in defeat.
"I don't know, Charlie," I say, releasing one of her arms. "I don't know."
I brush her hair out of her face.
"I'm about to let go of you. I'm going to stand up and get in my car. After I drop Landon off, I'll come back for you, okay?"
She nods her head but doesn't open her eyes. I release her other arm and slowly stand up. When I'm no longer pinning her to the ground, she quickly sits up and scoots away from me before standing up.
"I was lying to protect you, not to hurt you. You believe me, right?"
She rubs the spots on her arms where I was holding her down. She produces a meek, "Yeah." And then, after clearing her throat,
"Be back in an hour, and don't lie to me ever again."
I wait for her to walk back inside her house before I head back to the car.
"What the hell was that all about?" Landon asks.
"Nothing," I reply, staring out the window as we pass her house.
"Just telling her goodnight."
I reach into the back seat to grab all of our things.
"I'm going back to Jamais Jamais for my Land Rover."
Landon laughs.
"We sort of wrecked it last night. Tearing down a gate?"
"I remember, I was there. It might still drive okay, though. It's worth a shot, and I can't keep using... Whose car is this, anyway?"
"Mom's," he says. "I texted her this morning and told her yours was in the shop and that we needed hers today. I knew I liked this kid."
"So, Jeanette, huh?" I ask him. He turns toward the window.
"Shut up."
The Land Rover's front end was a debacle of twisted metal and debris, but apparently the damage was only cosmetic because it cranked right up. It took all I had not to go inside the gate again and scream at that psycho woman for leading us in the wrong direction, but I didn't. Charlie's dad has caused enough of a shitstorm in her world. I calmly drive my car to Charlie's house and wait for her at the end of the road like I said I would. I text her to let her know I'm in a different vehicle. I begin to turn theories over in my mind while I wait for her. It's hard for me to suspend belief in order to give our circumstances an explanation, but the only things I can come up with are otherworldly. A curse, an alien abduction, time travel, twin brain tumors? None of it makes sense. I'm making notes when the passenger door opens. A rush of wind follows Charlie inside the car, and I find myself wishing it would push her all the way to my side. Her hair is damp and she's in different clothes.
"Hey,"
she says, "Hi," and pulls the seatbelt into place.
"What were you writing?"
I hand her the notebook and pen and then back out of the driveway. She begins reading over my summary. When she's finished, she says,
"None of it makes sense, Silas.
We got into a fight and broke up the night before this started. The next day, we can't remember anything other than random stuff like books and photography. It keeps happening for a week until you don't lose your memory and I do." She pulls her feet up on the seat and taps the pen against the notebook. "What are we missing? There has to be something. I have no memory before this morning, so what happened yesterday that made you stop forgetting? Did anything happen last night?" I don't answer her right away. I think about her questions. How all along we've been assuming other people had something to do with this. We thought the shrimp was involved. We thought her mother was involved. For a while, I wanted to accuse Charlie's father, but maybe it's none of that. Maybe it has nothing to do with anyone else and everything to do with us. We reach my house no closer to the truth than we were this morning, than we were 2 days ago, than we were last week. Let's go through the back door in case my parents are awake. The last thing we need right now is for them to see me sneaking Charlie into my bedroom to stay the night. The back door won't take us past my father's study. It's unlocked, so I make my way in first. When all is clear, I grab her hand and rush her through the house, up the stairwell, and to my bedroom. By the time I shut the door behind us and lock it, we're both breathing heavily. She laughs and falls onto my bed.
"That was fun," she says. "I bet we've done that before."
She sits up and brushes the hair out of her eyes, smiling. She begins to look around my room through eyes that are seeing it again for the first time. I immediately get that longing in my chest, akin to how I felt last night at the hotel when she fell asleep in my arms. The feeling that I would do absolutely anything to be able to remember what it was like to love her. God, I want that back. Why did we ever break up? Why did we let everything that happened between our families come between us? From the outside, looking in, I'd almost believe we were soulmates before we let it all fall apart. Why did we think we could intervene with fate? I pause. When she looks at me, she knows something is going on in my head. She scoots to the edge of the bed and tilts her head. "Do you remember something?" I sit in the desk chair and roll toward her. I take both of her hands in mine and I squeeze them. "No," I say. "But I might have a theory." She sits up straighter.
"What kind of theory?"
I'm sure this is about to sound crazier coming from my mouth than it does swimming around in my head. "Okay, so this might sound stupid. But last night when we were at the hotel..." She nods, encouraging me to continue. "One of the last thoughts I had before you fell asleep was how, while you were missing, I didn't feel whole. But when I found you, it was the first time I felt like Silas Nash. Up until that point, I didn't feel like anyone. And I remember swearing to myself right before I fell asleep that I would never allow us to drift apart again. So I was thinking..." I release her hands and stand up. I pace the room a couple of times until she stands up too. I shouldn't be embarrassed to say this next part out loud, but I am. It's ridiculous, but so is every other thing in the whole world right now. I rub the nerves out of the back of my neck while I lock eyes with her. "Charlie, what if when we broke up we screwed with destiny?" I wait for her to laugh, but instead, a rush of chills covers her arms. She makes to rub them away as she slowly takes a seat back down on the bed.
"That's ridiculous," she mutters.
But there's no conviction in her words, which means maybe a part of her thinks this theory is worth exploring. I sit down in my chair again and position myself in front of her. "What if we're supposed to be together, and messing with that caused some sort of, I don't know, rift?" She rolls her eyes.
"So what you're implying is the universe wiped away all of our memories because we broke up? That seems a little narcissistic."
I shake my head. "I know how it sounds, but yes. Hypothetically speaking, what if soulmates exist, and once they come together, they can't fall apart?" She folds her hands together in her lap.
"How does that explain why you remembered this time and I didn't?"
I pace the room some more. "Let me think for a minute," I say to her. She waits patiently while I rub the floor raw. I hold up a finger. "Hear me out, okay?"
"I'm listening," she says.
"We've loved each other since we were kids. We obviously had this connection that has lasted our entire lives, up until external factors started getting in our way. The thing with our fathers, our families hating each other, you holding a grudge against me for believing your father was guilty. There's a pattern here, Charlie." I grab the notebook that I wrote in earlier and look at all the things we naturally remember and all the things we don't. And our memories. We can remember things that weren't forced on us. Things we had a passion for, all on our own. You remember books. I remember how to work a camera. We remember lyrics to our favorite songs. We remember certain things in history or random stories. But things that were forced on us by others, we forgot. Like football.
"What about people?" she asks. "Why did we forget all the people we've met?"
If we remembered people, we'd still have other memories. We'd remember how we met them, the impact they've had on our lives. I scratch at the back of my head. I don't know, Charlie. A lot of it doesn't make sense still. But last night, I felt a connection with you again, like I had loved you for years. And this morning, I didn't lose my memories like you did. There has to be significance in that. Charlie stands up and begins pacing the room.
Soulmates?
She murmurs. This is almost as ridiculous as a curse. Or two people developing in-sync amnesia. She narrows her eyes at me. I can see her mind working as she chews on the pad of her thumb.
Well then, explain how you fell back in love with me in just 2 days. And if we're soulmates, why wouldn't I have fallen back in love with you?
She stops pacing and waits for my answer. You spent a lot of your time locked up inside your old house. I spent all that time looking for you. I was reading our love letters, going through your phone, reading your journals. By the time I found you yesterday, I felt like I already knew you. For me, reading everything from our past somehow connected me to you again, like some of my old feelings had come back. But for you, I was barely more than a stranger. We're both sitting again, thinking, contemplating the possibility that this might be the closest we've come to any sort of pattern.
So what you're suggesting is, we were soulmates. But then external influences ruined us as people and we fell out of love?
Yeah, maybe. I think so.
And it'll keep happening until we set things right again?
I shrug because I'm not sure. It's just a theory, but it makes more sense than anything else we've come up with. 5 minutes pass while neither of us says a single word. She finally falls back onto the bed with a heavy sigh and says,
"You know what this means."
"No."
She pulls up onto her elbows and looks at me. "If this is true, you only have 36 hours to make me fall in love with you."
I don't know if we're onto something or if we're about to spend the remainder of our time chasing a dead end, but I smile because I'm willing to sacrifice the next 36 hours for this theory. I walk over to the bed and fall onto it beside her. We're both staring up at the ceiling when I say, "Well, Charlie, baby, we better get started." She throws an arm over her eyes and groans.
"I don't know you very well, but I can already tell you're going to have fun with this."
I smile because she's right. "It's late," I tell her. "We should try to get some sleep, because your heart is going to get a serious workout tomorrow." I set my alarm for 6 o'clock a.m. so that we can be up and out of the house before anyone else wakes up. Charlie sleeps closest to the wall and is out cold in a matter of minutes. I don't feel like I'll be able to fall asleep anytime soon, so I pluck one of her journals from the backpack and decide to read some before I fall asleep.
"Silas is crazy. Like, legit crazy. But my God, I have so much fun with him. He started a game he forces me to play sometimes called Silas Says. It's exactly the same as Simon Says, but, you know. With his name instead of Simon's, whatever. He's way cooler than Simon." We were on Bourbon Street today, and it was so hot, and we were both sweating and miserable. We had no idea where our friends had gone off to, and we weren't supposed to meet them for another hour. When it comes to me and Silas, I'm always the whiny one, but it was so hot this time. Even he was whining a little. Anyway, we walked past this guy who was propped up on a stool, and he had painted himself silver, like a robot. There was a sign leaning against his stool that said, "Ask me a question. Get a real answer. Only 25 cents. Silas handed me a quarter, so I dropped it in the bucket. "What's the meaning of life?" I asked the silver man. He made a stiff turn of his head and looked me square in the eye. In a very impressive robot voice, he said, "That depends on the life of which you search for meaning." I rolled my eyes at Silas.
Just another hack job scamming the tourists. I clarified my question so that at least the quarter wouldn't go to complete waste.
Fine, I said. What's the meaning of my life?
He took a rickety step down from his stool and bent at a 90-degree angle. With his silver robot fingers, he plucked my quarter out of the bucket and placed it in my palm. He glanced at Silas, and then to me, and smiled.
"You, my dear, have already found your meaning. All there is left to do now is dance."
Then the silver dude started dancing. Like, legit dancing. Not even in a robot style. He just had this big, goofy grin on his face and held his hands up like a ballerina and danced like no one was watching him. At that point, Silas grabbed my hands and said in a mock robot voice,
"Dance with me."
He tried to pull me into the street to dance with him, but hell no, embarrassing. I pulled away from him, but he wrapped his arms around me and did that thing where he puts his mouth right on my ear. He knows I freaking love that, so it was really unfair. He whispered,
"Silas says dance."
I don't know what it was about him in that moment. I don't know if it was because he honestly didn't care that anyone was watching us, or if it was because he was still talking to me in that silly robot voice. Whatever it was, I'm pretty sure I fell in love with him today. All over again. For like the 10th time. So I did what Silas said. I danced. And you know what? It was fun. So much fun. We danced all around Jackson Square, and we were still dancing when our friends found us. We were covered in sweat and out of breath, and if I were watching us from the sidewalk, I would probably be the girl crinkling up my nose, muttering gross under my breath. But I'm not that girl. I never want to be that girl. For the rest of my life, I want to be the girl dancing with Silas in the street. Because he's crazy. That's why I love him.
I closed the journal. Did that really happen? I want to read more, but I'm afraid if I keep going, I'll come across things I don't want to remember. I set the journal on my nightstand and roll over so that I can wrap my arm around her. When we wake up tomorrow, we'll only have one day left. I want her to be able to let go of everything that's going on between us so that she can genuinely focus on me and our connection and nothing else. Knowing Charlie, that's going to be hard. It'll take some crazy skills to be able to accomplish that. But luckily, I'm crazy. That's why she used to love me.
Chapter 9. Charlie. Okay, so how does this work exactly? I ask as we walk toward his car. Do we float down the bayou in a rowboat while little critters sing Kiss the Girl? Don't be a smartass. Silas grins. Then he stops me before I reach the car, grabbing my hand and pulling me back. I look up at him in surprise.
Charlize,
he says, looking first at my lips and then in my eyes.
If you give me half a chance, I can make you fall in love with me.
I clear my throat and try not to look away even though I want to. Well, you're off to a good start, so there's that. He laughs. I feel so awkward, I don't know what to do with myself, so I pretend to sneeze. He doesn't even say bless you. He just smiles at me, like he knows it was a fake sneeze. Stop it, I say. You're staring at me.
That's the point, Charlie. Look into my eyes.
I burst into laughter. You've got game, Silas Nash, I say, walking toward my side of the car. When we're both buckled in, Silas turns to me and says,
According to a letter you wrote, The first time we had sex was...
No, I don't want to go there. Where did you find that letter? I thought I hid it.
Not well enough.
Silas grins. I think I like flirty Silas. Even if we forget everything again tomorrow, at least I'll get one good day out of this. Let's go somewhere fun, I say. I can't remember the last time I had fun. We both start laughing at the same time.